Howdy-do, buckaroos. This is the Daily Observations podcast from Mac Observer. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I am live at WWDC, or at least in the vicinity of WWDC. And today, I have a couple of really interesting developer interviews for you. First, I have Philippe Casgrain, who works with Lightspeed as a developer and is also the organizer of NS North. And also today, I have an interview with the CEO of Omni Group, Ken Case. Enjoy. Hey, everyone. I am here with Philippe from NS North. Hi, Philippe.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good.
You can't hear me very well, but I am doing okay.
Yes.
Tell people a little bit about you and what you do.
Right. So I'm principal developer at a company called Lightspeed. We make point-of-sale software, but mostly, most people would probably know me for organizing the NS North conference, which happened, there were five instances of it since 2013, and the last one just happened in 2019. So in April of 2019, that was very exciting. Lots of people came, lots of different speakers from all walks of life, and lots of different experiences, and lots of happy people.
That's always what you like to hear.
Yes.
At a conference. So you probably bring a different perspective as an organizer of a conference to coming to something like this.
Yes. It's basically NS North is the best conference that I can't go to. Because I'm busy organizing it. So
That's a very good description.
Yes.
So because you do development as part of your the rest of your job.
Yes.
What did you see this week that's been interesting to you, whether it was in a session or something that was announced?
Right. So the software that I work on mostly is Mac-based, so
okay.
There's been less and less Mac stuff at WWDC because most of the focus is on iOS and iPhone, rightfully so, because that's the growth platform for sure. But some of us old school developers still develop for the Mac,
yes.
And there's still need for software on the Mac. So all the new stuff on Catalina is very, very interesting, especially the all the security stuff, the fact that the system volume is going to be read-only now. So that means that, yes, some software might break, some older software might break, but it also means that your system is going to be a lot more secure because you won't be able to have an infected system that could be taken over and zombified.
Right.
So that's pretty interesting. And the whole notarization aspect of your apps, where Apple, you send your app to Apple for extra validation. This is an automated test. It's not an App Store thing. You're not submitting to the App Store. It's just an extra step of validation of saying, Apple has looked at this and found it also free of malware.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at this and you say, oh, of course it's going to be free of malware. Who has malware on the Mac? It turns out, I have been told by little birdies in the engineering department that some developers actually submitted malware to notarization, which means that they were looking at this piece as saying, this is actual malware that they're submitting for notarization, but who do they think they are? So the system is kind of working already, which is kind of fun.
That's good to hear.
Yes, yes. Because the last thing you want is you want your Mac to turn into an iOS device where you can't do a whole lot of things. iOS being more limited for good reason. It's mobile and it's in the hands of a lot more people that maybe are less experienced with a computer, and a phone is a computer. So the Mac, you don't want to lose that ability to be able to do whatever you want. But on the other hand, you want to be able to tell your spouse or your children or something, go ahead and use that computer and it's very safe. So
right. The
two things do have to balance.
So are you excited? Because it did seem like we got a lot of macOS changes, updates, information. Like, we do always kind of get, you know, they do kind of make a big deal about the Mac piece, but it seemed, and this is all very hazy, and it's been a long week, but it seemed like even last year, a lot of stuff came besides dark mode in Mojave, but they didn't spend as much time on Mojave last year as I feel like they did Catalina this year.
Yes.
So that's kind of, like, to me, as somebody who's actively interested in that part of it, does it seem like there's been a little bit more focus?
There's been more focus on the Mac this year, for sure. Dark mode got a big part of the attention last year. And dark mode is more than skin deep, to be fair. It involves a lot more than just a reskinning of the OS. And it's kind of fun to have it. And we all saw it as a preview of what was going to happen for iOS. you kind of want to deploy on the Mac first for that reason.
Yeah.
So that made sense. But yes, there is a lot more focus on the Mac that's visible this year. Even in the labs, you see that there are more labs about people writing Mac software. Whereas in the past, it was like, I have this problem about my installer. Right, there is one lab from 9 to 10 on Tuesday morning, so that's it. You know, oh, okay. Well, now there's much more availability of engineering, which is good. So
as part
from the sessions, obviously, but there's also the engineering part of it, which is really good. I kind of wish they didn't spend that much time on the Mac Pro, because it's not a Mac for developers. It's really a Mac for professional artists and editors and videographers and stuff like that. It's not a Mac for us, right? We can barely afford to stand for the display. So,
well, I think the reason so much time was spent is because of all the people who complain. And so I think they absolutely had to spend all of that time just to keep rubbing all the haters' nose and all the people that complain.
But do you think that they're going to stop complaining because they have this new Mac Pro?
No, because even if they were giving them away in boxes of Cracker Jack, it would still be too expensive, or it wouldn't be the right color of silver, or the holes are the wrong size in the cooling system.
Yeah,
there's always something. But you know, the thing everybody kept complaining about all this time was specs and power. There's no horsepower in an iMac. There's no horsepower in a Mini. There's no horsepower. There's no graphic anything. You can have
to be fair. An iMac Pro has a lot of horsepower.
It does.
Yeah.
But it's an iMac, which isn't an actual computer. So why would I buy an iMac? Why would I buy just an iMac? You know.
Well, an iMac is a laptop in a big case, because it's got essentially laptop components. An iMac Pro is a pro computer in
a
big case. It's quite different internally. But from the outside, you're perfectly right. It looks like an iMac. It's even called iMac.
So. Right. But I think because the iMac started as the gumdrop, it looked like candy. You know, it wasn't a real computer because it came in grape as a color option. So mine was grape. That's why when I talk about them, I always talk about the grape one, because I had grape.
Yes.
So I think that iMac, you know, like, the iMac is for people who don't need an actual computer. Like, I don't think the iMac, even the iMac Pro, ever really shook that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that to the iMac Pro's detriment, that people don't really think of it as, like, a real computer. But what I hope is that the modularity piece, you know, pop it open and get into all your parts, which is what we used to do with the towers.
Yes.
It was great. I'm hoping that some of that will come down to, like, the Mini and maybe the iMac. I mean,
really, it's the only expandable Mac, and it's quite unaffordable, even the laptops, it used to be that you could pop them open and change the hard disk or change the RAM or something like that, which are minimum.
I had a PowerBook 1400.
There you go.
So I know exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
That little Lego laptop with amazing.
You could do things, whereas today with the touch bars, it's kind of all connected together, and if you touch the security chip, secure enclave, you're done. There's nothing you can do. So.
Right, but I hope that, like, what they learned by putting that machine together and developing it and turning it into something that is modular, that can have swappable components, that the new Mini will be part, the next evolution of the Mini will do that, or the next evolution of like the iMac or something in the laptops. Like, I get some of why they're doing what they're doing, but I would like to think some of the
changes. Love your optimism. That's fantastic.
Well, let's talk about optimism for a minute. How does it feel as primarily a Mac developer to suddenly have them kick the door open and let all those iOS developers in to do the same thing?
Well, I have mixed feelings, obviously, because why don't you write a real Mac app at some point? But on the other hand, there's quite a few apps that are very high quality, that only exist on iPad, that will now be able to exist on the Mac. And we all know what they are, these apps. It's not just a fly-by-night part of the 1 million apps. It's these apps that we know we have teams that are working on them for days and weeks and professionally designed and they sometimes take millions of dollars to develop. Well, these will be able to be ported to the Mac too, and I look forward to having those. So that can only benefit the Mac, and it means that you can stop having maybe the crappier version of an application or just a web page inside of a little app on your Mac, because the Mac can do it. So that is, it's going to be native. Like there's no ifs and buts about that. Right. It's not going to be just a React.js application, just a JavaScript application running in a web container. It's going to be actually fully native. So once they iron out the little problems of, I want to delete something, swiping with a mouse, not that much fun.
No.
Swiping at a finger, super easy.
Yeah.
Right. Once they work out these little kinks and make the interaction model work properly, I have high hopes that it's going to be okay. That being said, having just one OS that does everything has been shown to be problematic. So I hope that they don't lean too much into the, we're going to put macOS and iOS together and make this jumbled thing. So the way that Catalyst is working, I have my own theory that you're going to be able to run Mac apps on iPad, and I'm going to call that Project Enzyme.
So. I like it. Anything else you wanna make sure people know?
Sure. So for the conference that I ran,
yes,
we have some videos, and we're kind of committed to making the videos available now that we have a little bit more time. So if you want to check it out, it's got to be at nsnorth.ca.
Okay.
And you have all the past years, and you can look at our speaker lineup and see, that person was there, and now that person is doing great things. So I really look forward to meeting more people at the conference here, and both AltConf and WWDC, and making more connections, and hopefully we'll see each other in the future.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm glad you came by to talk to me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Philly.
Bye.
Hello, TDO listeners. It's Dave Hamilton here for TDO and everybody here at the Mac Observer, of course. And today I have the distinct pleasure of thanking Carbon Copy Cloner from Bombix Software back again as a sponsor of our WWDC coverage here this year in 2019. You know, keeping your data safe is super important these days, given all the various failures and malware and really just the simple human errors that we all make, which can wind up irreparably changing or removing or valuable work. Thanks to Carbon Copy Cloner, though, data safety becomes automatic and stops being a worry. In fact, I think that's my favorite thing about Carbon Copy Cloner. It's on every Mac I use, and I never have to think about it. I just can trust it to do its job on a daily or weekly schedule, and I can go on living and working secure in knowing that regardless of any stupid mistakes I make or anything anybody else does to my computer, my data is as safe as I need it to be. Now, Carbon Copy Cloner's name job is, of course, cloning your data, and having a bootable clone of your Mac's main volume is super convenient when a problem strikes, because you can just take it, plug it into any other Mac, and back it up and boot it up. You could back it up again if you wanted, but booting it up is really what you would do. And that's the beauty of Carbon Copy Cloner, is that anything that it creates, either a clone, you know, bootable clone, or even if you just have it back up a folder of your data, all the stuff that it does is readable by pretty much any computer. You don't need a copy of Carbon Copy Cloner on there. The data is just saved as files, or of course you can save it in disk images or whatever, and you can just access it. You don't need anything special. And when you're in that panic moment needing to restore your data, not needing anything special is awesome. Carbon Copy Cloner, though, also manages all your snapshots, right? Time Machine takes some of these snapshots, but then Time Machine expires them after 24 hours. That might not be what you want. Good news, that's what Carbon Copy Cloner is here to do, is not only can you see all of your snapshots, the ones that Carbon Copy Cloner creates, but also the ones that Time Machine creates, you can manage your own snapshot schedule so that you can decide your own retention strategy and keep things as long as you want. Makes a huge difference. And it's just cool to be able to manage these snapshots. Time Machine doesn't really give you any way to do that. Carbon Copy Cloner to the rescue. Here we go. That's how it's going to work. And speaking of Carbon Copy Cloner and rescuing, the folks at Bombix Software understand that every business is the customer service business. And they've organized their company with that at its core. Everybody that you will talk to there or communicate with from a support standpoint is employed at Carbon Copy Cloner by Bombix Software. And they're really transparent about everything. In fact, it's not rare, if you have a problem that warrants it, that you'll be speaking directly to Mike Bombix, the guy that writes the bulk of the software and makes it all happen and understands this stuff at a core level. This is the kind of company that you want to be dealing with. So go to carboncopycloner.com, download your free 30-day trial. That's your way of saying thanks to them for sponsoring us here at TMO, right? It doesn't cost you anything. Just go and download your 30-day free trial. My guess, though, is within those first 30 days, your thanks will change from just being, hey, thanks for supporting the great folks at TMO and TDO for what they do in their WWDC coverage. You will be thanking the folks at Bombic Software for creating a great piece of software on its own. And that is awesome. So go check it out. CarbonCopyCloner.com. Our thanks to the folks at Bombic Software and Carbon Copy Cloner for creating the thing they do and doing what they do. All right, Kelly, back to you here at WWDC.
Hey, everybody. This is Kelly Gamont again, live from near WWDC. We are next door at AltConf, and I'm here talking to Ken Case, the head of Omni Group. Hi, Ken.
Hi, good morning.
I'm glad you're here with us, and I know that you've had a very busy June already, even before you got here. And tell us a little about what Omni Group's been up to.
Sure. Well, the big thing that we just released last week was OmniFocus for the web. So one of the most persistent requests that we've had from our customers over the years has been, won't you go with OmniFocus for Windows? What can I do when I have a Mac at home, but I go to work and then I still want to be able to get to my tasks? Or maybe even I have a Mac at work, but I don't want my personal tasks on my work machine. This gives you a way now to access those tasks
through the web. Great.
So, yeah, we just did that last week.
I've heard rumblings about, the number one customer request is OmniFocus on the web, almost as long as I've known about OmniFocus, which is a really long time.
We started this project 10 years ago.
That would explain it.
Yeah. But 10 years ago, as you may recall, it was 2009, which was the year before the iPad was introduced.
Yes.
So we were going along, working really hard on OmniFocus for the web. We had it pretty far along, and we started hearing these rumors that maybe Apple's doing a tablet. And we were trying to think out, is the tablet going to be based on the Mac? Is it going to be based on the iPhone? It wasn't obvious at that point which way they were going to go. And as we were having some of these conversations, our marketing person, manager, asked me, so we're going to stick with the plan, though, right? We're going to finish OmniFocus for the web before we get distracted with new shiny stuff. And there's merit to that, especially if you're working on marketing plans and you're trying to figure out what's
happening. It's a very valid question, yeah.
But I was like, we're going to reevaluate. If Apple releases something really great,
we need it on that
because we made a plan, not knowing about this.
Exactly.
So of course, when iPad did come out, we shifted all our attention to our iPad or bust, and we were all in and brought all of our apps over. So,
I remember it well. I think I actually talked to you on the Tuatar cast about iPad or bust at the time, because not a lot of people were coming out kind of cheerleading the iPad in that way.
Right. But we were pretty sure pretty quickly.
Yes.
So that
as we found out this week, as well you should have been.
Right.
So, yes. So OmniFocus for the web is a thing now.
It is a thing now.
Which is great.
And we've already started working on, the next update to it. So right now, OmniFocus for the web, for the initial launch, you can get to your projects and your tags and your task list and your inbox and so on. The basic features that, say, we introduced when we brought OmniFocus to the iPhone.
Yes.
Years ago. The first bits of feedback that we started hearing is, what about the forecast perspective when we bring that over? So we're working on that now. It's already a public test. Anyone who's subscribed to OmniFocus to the web can just wish to test that OmniFocus.com, and they can start using forecast now and giving us feedback.
I do feel obligated to ask you, will you be getting a new Mac Pro to test and make sure that all of your apps run well on this new monster machine?
I feel like that's a moral imperative.
Right? Yes. I do. I do also think that this would make you a job creator, because you're going to have to get a tour guide to bring people in to ooh and ah at it and then back away slowly. Right. You have to put a little velvet rope around,
Set up an AR exhibit.
There you go. Yes. Yes. Now that's exactly what needs to happen. See? So that's all stuff that we got out of the keynote on Monday. We've covered the whole thing. We've got the new hardware. We've got the AR to go with it. What did you see on Monday between, because the keynote was public, and then in the afternoon they do the developer state of the union, which is a little more nuts and bolts about some of the stuff that was casually mentioned in the morning. So it sometimes is a very different experience. So overall on Monday, what was the stuff that was the most interesting to you that Apple announced?
There are so many different things that are interesting. It's hard for me to think of where to start. SwiftUI is, of course, really interesting. It's fun to see this sort of live development of your interface and being able to see what it looks like in a way that, you know, it reminds me a lot of when of the WWDC 22 years ago in 97, right after Apple bought Next. And we were doing demos of Interface Builder in the first place, saying, here, just see how easy it is to build these apps.
Yeah.
And at that time, in some ways, it really was sort of simpler than, like the amount of code you had to write to build a Next app at that time, or even an early Mac OS X app, was smaller. But some of this, the boilerplate that we saw in the keynote demo of, here's all this stuff you have to do, like translate auto constraints, turn this stuff off, are because they wanted to maintain backward compatibility with that code.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, they've realized maybe some other defaults are better, and so you end up pulling in all this boilerplate just to make things kind of behave in what we think now are the best practices.
Yes.
And so it's nice to get a fresh start again.
Yes.
And that's one of the really great things about it. And so you just end up with, you know, none of this code started out. It started out thinking you needed to have a bunch of boilerplate, but
yes.
Over time, it sort of has landed that way. And it's nice to get back away from it. And it's also nice to see the language leveraged in a way that, you know, AppKit really leveraged Objective-C and did a great job of it. And made me fall in love with the platform, which is why I started programming in Objective-C in 89 and have been doing it ever since.
Yes.
But Swift is really great, and it's now mature enough that it's ready for, you know, its own, to go its own path on some of these things. So that's really great.
So you said you started on Objective-C in 1989, so I know I'm just going to drive you straight to the bar by saying this, but 30 years, like, you've seen a lot of evolution in development tools, developers, over that amount of time. Can you talk a little bit about that? Which is something I didn't say I was going to ask you at all.
No, it's okay, totally.
Not having an answer.
I mean, 30. So the Objective-C that I saw then, it was AppKit, but we didn't have Foundation, which is now the layer that AppKit is built on top of. So if you wanted to work with a string, for example, you were actually working with C strings.
Okay.
And you would pass a C string straight to a button. And there was no... the memory management model was all sort of C-based, so it was alloc and free. There wasn't even retain counting yet to keep track of if two different things wanted to maybe share a data object, and then as soon as both of them are done, then it goes away.
Yeah.
One of them had to pick, or you had to invent your own retain counting. So, yeah, things have changed a lot over that time. Of course, that was before the web. The web wasn't invented on the Next around that time frame, but and that was the platform that, you know, that I was doing this Objective-C on. But the web that was invented on the Next platform, like that World Wide Web app that Tim Berners-Lee wrote, was not a browser. It was an editor, really.
Yeah.
And so it was not... You wouldn't use it the way you use a browser today at all. Like, every time you follow a link, it would open a new window, as an example. And imagine doing that on the web today, that would just be nuts.
So, yes, that's what tabs are for.
And there were no tabs.
Right.
Were, yeah. So it's been kind of a wild ride.
I can't even imagine. What has the conference itself evolution been in that time? Because you had said that you were here.
Yeah, well, so my first WWDC conference was right after Apple bought Next. So Apple, the announcement was made in December, right before Christmas in 96.
Okay.
And then 97 was the very long Galileo keynote
Macworld.
And then there was a WWDC a little bit.
Yes.
And so that was my first WWDC.
Okay. How is this one different from that one?
I was just actually, as I was coming here to this to talk with you,
yes.
I was reflecting on one of the differences, which is they used to, you used to just be able to enter and exit the conference from any door, right? Like, security is completely different. This is before 9/11, remember, right?
Yes.
And so airports were easier, conferences were easier. Apple was less concerned about security and privacy, right. Secrecy and all that stuff. Of course, yeah. All the sessions are now public in a way that they weren't before. Like,
true.
They were not broadcasting on the web. The web
there wasn't one in some of those cases, yeah, for a fair number of those.
And if they were starting to produce video recordings sometimes, not of everything, and it might come out a while later or a year later.
Right.
So... I don't know. And of course, a lot of the emphasis at that time was on QuickTime technologies and OpenDoc. And there was a lot of concern from the classic Mac community about, okay, what does this next stuff mean? And is it real? You know, when they see this demo of just a few lines of code producing this thing that they normally have had to write a lot of boilerplate for. There was a lot of skepticism, shall we say.
Oh, I'm sure, yes. Maybe some dismissal. Yeah. It can't be as good. It's like, only
okay,
half the lines of
now
code.
Now I'm going to go back to my... That's all a nice demo, but I've got to go do some real work now.
Right, exactly.
And I hope we don't fall into that pattern this year with our studies. We look at new things.
I was just thinking, like, that... It seems like that is a possible... I mean, that's a possible outcome from this. Is like, I'm not going to do that thing that you just gave me. I'm suspicious that you can do that with four lines of code, or, you know, it can't be bright, or it can't be well-structured, or it can't be, you know, it can't have all the stuff that it actually needs in those four little lines of code, whatever. My hope is that we have enough people who are new enough that they're not set in that old way, or are just happy to, like, I can write way less code and be able to do that and have it look nice.
Right.
And that would be a much and be excited about, like, you know, technically after a fashion, like, I don't have to spend as much time designing the thing because I wrote all the code that made it the right thing and it didn't take as long, it wasn't as complicated, it's all human readable, I can come back later and, like, suss out what those things mean, and so I'm gonna do this because it saves me time.
Well,
so
I think
that's my hope.
Apple's in a very different position now than they were then, too, right? Like, then they had to beg people to come to the conference, and they had to bribe people to come to the conference, and they were giving away things at the conference. Like, I remember one of our... They had a raffle to give away a power book, and they had, you know, that you would get your bomber jackets and whatever else is.
I've seen some
presents
of the
under
older...
the seats and,
yeah, I've seen some of the older giveaway stuff.
And even so, they weren't full.
Right.
Whereas here... You know, we have 60 employees at Omni, and we managed to get two tickets.
Yeah.
And it's not because we only had two people interested in coming.
Exactly.
But yeah, now you're lucky if you get a ticket.
Yes.
So it's a very different position.
I remember actually joking. There was the year everything sold out in 2 hours, and there was the year everything sold out in 2 minutes. And I remember joking at the time... Tickets are gonna sell out 15 minutes before they go on sale next year. You watch. And that was when they switched to the lottery system, where it was like, yes, please, can I have a ticket? And then they sort of choose at random from all of the people who enter. And so I think, like, Apple's position and the developer position, you know, like, of the people who are developers who are interested in coming to this conference, both of them are hugely, hugely different than they used to be.
Compared to the old cover story that had Apple and the word tray across the top.
The Wired cover,
yes.
Which I keep, yes. Yes, I remember it well.
But then, well, that reminds me, actually, the other thing that I was really excited about in the keynote was the Pro hardware. And not just because I like Pro hardware and everything.
Yeah.
And I don't think I need 1.5 terabytes of RAM in any of my machines.
Are you sure, but, though? Because it's an option now.
I mean, I'd be willing to find
now.
Out if someone wanted to tell me that. I'd be happy to just find out how much that helps compile times and stuff. But...
For science, I'm glad you're throwing yourself on that hand grenade for all of the
somebody needs
all
to do
the
it,
other
right?
developers in the world. Why not you? Yes.
But the thing that I think makes the most difference to me is, even in whether or not I need it, some of my customers really do need it.
Yes.
And in the past, if I had a customer that needed that capability and they were using the Mac, but they needed more than the top-of-the-line Mac could offer them, they had to go to a different platform. Mm-hmm. And if they went to a different platform, that meant they could no longer use my software on it.
Exactly.
So as a developer, I'm really keen to see the Apple ecosystem be inclusive of all of those top-level customers. We don't want to lose them just because suddenly they outgrew what the Mac was able to do.
Right.
And so that's a huge one from my point of view.
Yes. And when that Mac Pro does roll underneath your desk, I'm hopeful we will be able to record another podcast just with it in the vicinity. And that one will automatically sound better and be better produced.
Because you'll get a travel budget to come see it in person just to make sure that...
Oh, Jesse, you say that,
but
I can drive to Seattle, so it's not necessarily a thing that is outside the realm of possibility. So the last question I had for you is, I know what we've seen, and I know, obviously you know what you think about it and what kind of stuff, but as of today, and I know this answer could be completely different after lunch, what do you expect will take the most of, not just your time, but Omni Group's time and resources over the summer?
Over the summer, I think the top priorities I have based on the announcements, the things that we want to really have on launch day are support for multiple windows on the iPad.
Yes.
Documents, I call them windows because that's how I think of the stuff.
Yes.
Coming from the Mac side of things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, multiple documents open. And of course, people are going to expect dark mode.
Yes.
Otherwise, you just won't feel like an iPad app, I think, if you don't support both of those things.
Yes. What do you think of iPadOS? Like we talked about earlier, iPad or bust was the big...
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people who were really not into it to start with. And, isn't that cute? iPod hi-fi, and very dismissive. So what do you think of iPadOS and sort of splitting that off and...
I think it's a great idea, yeah. I mean, obviously, it shares a lot in common with the iPhone operating system,
yes.
The iOS, which was originally named iPhoneOS. And then as they brought the iPad in, they're like, okay, we should make this more generic and we'll call it iOS.
Yes.
Both of those platforms also share a lot of code with the tvOS, and they share a lot of code with macOS.
Yeah.
And I think it's totally appropriate that the iPad, which has different interactions and different capabilities, has an operating system that has its own name.
I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to see what everything looks like in dark mode that I have from Omni when I can go check that box once everything is available this fall. So, Ken, where can people find out more about what you all are up to? Because I know you have a blog.
Yeah, really. You can go to omnigroup.com. It's our website. And, of course, our blog is at omnigroup.com/blog.
Excellent. And I'm sure we will talk more later this week. I know I'm seeing you later tonight at the James Dempsey party.
Yeah, it should be fun.
We will be rocking the house. And I just want to thank you so much for coming by and talking to me.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thanks.